This is the Sean Miller Podcast, presented by Deer Park Roofing. Now, here's your hosts, Paul Frichtner and Adam Baum, with the head coach of the Xavier Musketeers, Sean Miller.
Welcome into another episode of the Sean Miller Podcast. I'm Paul Frichtner alongside Adam Baum, across from the head coach of the Xavier Musketeers, Sean Miller. This podcast is presented to you by Deer Park Roofing, as well as the official payroll sponsor of the Sean Miller Podcast, payroll partners, and our friends at TGE Solar. Sean, it's great to be here with you. The season's just a couple of days over now after the loss to Georgia in the first round of the NIT. So first off, I want to congratulate you on your first season as the co-host of a podcast here. And now, here as we get to the end. So before we talk about the season, What's the first season of the podcast been like for you?
You know, it's been very rewarding for me. First of all, you guys make it easy and do such a great job. I wasn't sure how it would go because obviously the highs of a win, a low of a loss, the travel and everything that goes into these last 5 months, it makes a college basketball season, I mean, in some ways so grueling. You know, you wonder, okay, how will this fit in? But it's been really seamless. What it's allowed me to do is, you know, connect with those people that really make you as a coach want to be a coach. Why it's so rewarding, the things that you deep down love about college sports or being the head coach at Xavier, is to reconnect with so many of our guests that we've had on the podcast, whether it be Chris Mack, who him and I work together here and are good friends and share the coaching, you know, 10 years here at Xavier, to somebody like Justin Dolman, where him and his family were all together while we were filming the podcast after a game and hadn't really talked to Justin and been around him a lot over the last, 15 years. So the reconnection with former players and people that that mean a lot to you, and it's always has always been a reminder for me that when I'm interviewing them or we're on the podcast together, what it really is about. And, you know, it's about the wins and losses. It's about, you know, the things that happen on the court. But the relationships and the sharing of the locker room, the highs and lows of what we go through, it's a bond for life. And you really feel that when you talk to everybody.
Coach, 23 weeks. This is our 23rd episode. We did not miss a week. I think if you would have told me that starting out back in October that we would have made it through the whole way without missing an episode, I would have said you're lying to me.
Well, especially in a season where things haven't always been smooth, right?
Yeah. So it's and that's a credit to you as well. That you know, you said you were going to do this thing, you stuck with it, even though sometimes, you know, I'm sure that you had other things that you wanted to do than sit here in this chair and talk to us on a podcast.
But I'll tell you, Adam, not to interrupt, but what I said just a minute ago, I really mean.
Yeah.
So many times coming off of a practice or, you know, the anxiety of the next game, or, man, we got to get better and tough loss, whatever. Anytime that I've done the podcast and had these conversations and you're talking to the people that we've had as guests, it always refreshed me and recharged me. That's what I would tell you. Walking out of the podcast, going home, I felt better many times than I did before I did the podcast.
That's again, good to hear.
Back to my point of, you know, the relationships and reconnecting with so many people.
Yeah. All right. And, you know, this was a season, as you said, that it didn't go the way you wanted it to go. I know that. I know how much you care about this and how much you want to win games and be playing in the NCAA tournament. But when you look back on a season like this, do you try to take things away from it? Like, do you walk away from this feeling hungrier, more motivated than you had before? Like, where would your headspace be after a season that didn't go the way you wanted it to go?
Yeah, I mean, it just ended. And, you know, I think the spring a lot of times for me is, you know, I'm the type of person that talks things out, you know, that rehashes. And I think that's the way that I process things the best way I can to now take the next step. But it's self-evaluation. It's what are the things that we could have done better, learning from mistakes, because even in a season like we had a year ago where we seemed like everything went right other than Zach getting hurt in that season, right? There were things that you learned from that year that you could do better as a coach and a staff, and whether it be in recruiting, whether it be in coaching, practice planning, just scouting, even how we travel, you know, how we go about the different trips, et cetera. So I think that that phase is just beginning. But, you know, here's what I would say about our season. I knew in August that we had a real mountain to climb because at that point, Jerome and Zach had just been injured. And we attempted to replace them with two freshmen in Gittes, you know, three guys from overseas. And thank goodness we had them because in many ways they've been a godsend to allow us to have a process and practice, to have depth in a game and be able to go from start to finish. But when we lost two guys that I think would have been Big East starters, and I think in Zach's case in particular, might have had a chance to be an all Big East performer, based on the fact that we lost 10 other players. And I go back to Kansas City when we played Texas and the game ended and we addressed the team and talked about the future. At that moment, there was only one player that played on this year's team, and that was Dez Claude. So that's never a good thing. I can't imagine that being a good thing. So we knew that there was going to be a huge transformation from year one to year two, but the unexpected loss of the two guys we've talked a lot about over this year, I don't think we ever quite had enough in today's Big East and the schedule that we played to beat the best teams on our schedule. And if you really look at the definition of our season, that's really where we pulled up the most short, like where we didn't get the job done, is in that quad one playing against the number one seeds, the number two seed, the number three seed, you know, Marquette, Creighton, Houston, UConn three times at Purdue. We weren't able to win any of those games. And those losses mount. And, you know, confidence sometimes can become a part of this. So because of that, I really tried to take it one day, one week at a time and see if we could fight this out to the end. And really, that's what we did. We entered the NIT and we bowed out at Georgia by 2 points.
It, the way that this season kind of came to an end and you hit that stretch there in February where you have a tough home loss to Creighton, you have a tough home loss to Providence. And it felt like so many times this year, you're in a two possession game. And you talked about it last year. You talked a lot on the show about how last year there were so many games that were, you were 6 points up or 6 points down or somewhere in between, right? Two possession games. And a lot of those games you're able to win, but this year the script kind of flipped. What did you see just as a coach that maybe, you know, the 10th war was one of your best, strongest points this year, but sometimes you had maybe dug yourself in a hole to the point where you couldn't dig yourself out even with the best 10th war you could possibly play.
So the 10th war is the last 4 minutes of the game. And believe it or not, I think this year's team might be one of the best I've ever coached in the last 4 minutes. We did it again at Georgia.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We were down 10 points at the 4 minute media timeout. We lost, we won the last war 10-2. So we ended up losing by 2 points. You know, that would have been the last game. But what was different is throughout the game, we just had too many peaks and valleys. We dug ourselves the hole. We're coming from down eight. We're coming from, instead of being up 10, we're only up four. And that's what happens when you have a team that's playing in these 50-50 games. You know, in so many of our games, it's just, it's even, or to some degree, maybe we're facing a deficit, meaning we would have to play over our head to beat this team. And that's the feeling that I had. Our lack of depth, our lack of experience with each other, and really just in terms of our front court, especially the front court ability and depth, not just one player, but just as a group, we weren't able to overcome that nearly as much as maybe I had hoped, and that became the storyline. Now, the development of Dez, Quincy, and Davion, and what those three guys did day in, day out, game in, game out, in some ways is historic when you look at our program. I don't know if there's been three players that have ever had greater meaning to their own team than those three had this year to us. And each of them, in their own right, had really great seasons. In two of the three cases, somewhat remarkable.
Yeah, what was the game there at the end of the year? 65 of the 76, the game against Butler.
Yeah.
65 of the 76 points came from those three guys. And it's just a microcosm of the season. And you talk about the improvement of Dez Claude and the most improved player in the conference. Quincy Oliveri setting the all-time single-season three-point record in that game against Georgia the other day for the 106 threes on a season, breaking Trayvon Blewett's record. And then Davion McKnight, who to me, looking at the course of his season and where he was, thinking back to like maybe Vegas to where he was at the end of the year, just the growth of your point guard was incredible. Mm.
So I'll start with Dez being the only returning player from a year ago. Dez as a freshman averaged less than 5 points, but he was a vital player on our team that went to the Sweet 16. I mean, when you think about the contributions he made as the year went on as a freshman, he got better and better and better as his freshman year grew. And he was on the all-freshman team and played in a Sweet 16. Going from that year, he made a huge jump through the spring, summer, and fall. We knew he was going to be a much better player. But to go from 4 to 16 points is an incredible increase. And to be able to do that in a much different role, overcoming the loss of Jerome and Zach, I think even puts an exclamation point on that difference. And if you think about how he played against Georgia at Georgia, an SEC team where he scores 30 points, and you know he was 5 for 6 from three, which was great to see, playing at Georgetown where you know he scored over 30 points. In a college game, there aren't many players that score 30 points. It's not an easy thing to do.
No.
So I think when you look at his pick and roll development, his ability to get fouled, his improvement from the free throw line, the next step for Dez is just to become a better and more consistent three-point shooter. And I think he showed that he has that ability even in his last game against Georgia. The other thing about Dez is he played with an elbow situation, which he's going to have to get cleaned out here after the year. And, you know, I admire him for being able to do it every day. You know, he didn't miss practices. He didn't miss games. He didn't hurt himself any further, but I think it bothered him throughout the year. And I have no doubt that could have impacted his ability to shoot the three. But he's going to make that jump. There's no doubt in my mind. And when he does, I think he then takes one more step, similar to Colby Jones, when you compare Colby as a sophomore to what he became as a junior, and certainly looking forward to that.
Was that with his elbow? Was that something that happened before the season? Or was it?
I think it's just more of a wearing down effect throughout the year, and it's you know, it's nothing significant, but you know, when it bothers you, it bothers you, and yeah. I think that Dez, you know, just didn't say a lot about it. And worked hard every day in practice, worked hard, obviously, throughout the year. But that was a factor, I think, in his shooting percentage. But it was great to see him have the last game that he did because, you know, sometimes when you get going a certain way and the ball's not going in, you can lose your confidence. And I think for most of the year, that was not a problem for him. He was able to get to the basket, score the ball. And, again, I point to his free throw shooting. If you remember him last year in the NCAA tournament, I think it was against Pitt where they were fouling on purpose and he went to the line in multiple trips. He didn't look confident. If you look at his overall free throw shooting percentage as a freshman, it was not good. But this year he became one of the Big East really most consistent and best free throw shooters. He shot right around 80%. So that huge jump that he made, oftentimes, as I've seen, it follows from behind the arc. And I have no doubt with his work ethic and love of the game that adding that, then, you know, his future is incredibly bright. But his season to be voted as the most improved player in the Big East Conference, that's not the media. That's the 10 opposing coaches. And it's not like they call me and check. By the way, I'm not allowed to vote for my own player. So I don't have a vote. I think for coaches to be able to do that, I think says a lot about how much they admired his growth and how much they respect him as a player.
Coach, I'm also in the process of working on my three-point shot for next year. And I'm just curious, like Dez is in this similar spot. What does that look like? How do you go about attacking one specific skill and saying, you know what, you're going to be better at this next year than you were this year?
Well, I think one thing, you know, that I've learned, and, you know, I learned shooting from my dad. My dad is one of the best coaches that I've been around when it comes to developing shooters. He coached at Blackhawk High School, which is, you know, a suburb of Pittsburgh, and he wasn't able to recruit players, right? So, you know, you have to develop them as they're in your district. They go to elementary school, they go to junior high, and then he coaches them in high school. And he actually had three players that he coached that went on to lead college basketball in three-point percentage from Blackhawk High School. Jim Cantamessa from Siena, Dante Calabria played at North Carolina, and my brother Arch at NC State. Each of those three guys at one point in their career were leading college basketball from the three-point percentage. It's a heck of a statement.
Wow. Yeah.
So learning from him, you know, there's some redundancy to it, right? I think in today's world of social media and sometimes, you know, all the different creative things you see a guy like, you know, Steph Curry do, you know, that's the 1% of the 1% of how they're trying to be better. So many guys, it's being able to go in the gym, gain speed, no distractions, and keeping track of makes. Don't shoot to shoot. How long did you shoot for? An hour? Well, how many did you make? Was it at game speed? And because the one thing that's never going to change is the speed of the game. And there's times to do different things in building your shot, but there's no substitute from quick feet, catch a game pass, shoot the ball, and keep track of what you make, and do it every single day. Most guys can't sustain it over long periods of time. But the players that I've seen make the most growth, it's not the trickery of it, it's the consistent regimen. It's like lifting weights. It's diet, exercise, consistency. There's a lot of different new wave things you can do in a weight room. But if you just went with the core lifts and you ate properly and you never missed, you're going to experience gains. Shooting falls into that boring category, right? Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't different drills and different things that you can do to spice it up. And then when you look at the flaws of a shooter, the footwork, the mechanics of it, certain players and certain things, I think you have to make better. And then so with that, can you do that plus have that consistent regimen? But there's no substitute for hard work. There's no substitute for game speed. And there's no substitute for keeping track for the amount you shoot and make. I mean, those three things, that's not rocket science, but to be able to have a facility, have the wherewithal, the work ethic to do it, not over a month, but over 5 or 6 months, I've yet to see somebody do that and not be better.
Good to know. Yeah. I'm going to need like a master key so I can come on there.
We'll supply that. We'll see how long you can hang in there.
Off-season content. We'll make a video.
The Sean Miller Podcast is proud to partner with Deer Park Roofing, a company that's provided elite service for homes and businesses since 1996 and leads the industry in professionalism, quality, and responsiveness. Whether your needs are residential or commercial, like the outstanding work on the Cintas Center, the home of Xavier Basketball, Deer Park can handle any job and ensure it's done right. Deer Park's motto is protect what's important, and what's important to you is important to Deer Park Roofing. Visit DeerParkRoofing.com. The Sean Miller Podcast is proud to partner with Payroll Partners, where you're not just a number. That means providing a best-in-class HR and payroll experience that was built on award-winning technology and live support customer service with a dedicated payroll specialist who's just a phone call away. You shouldn't have to choose between technology and customer service. At Payroll Partners, you get both. Payroll Partners is locally owned and operated by a proud Xavier alum. Visit payrollpartners.net. That's payrollpartners.net.
Welcome back to the Sean Miller Podcast, as always presented by Deer Park Roofing. You talked about Des Claude. Let's go to Davion McKnight and where you saw, you know, from the start of the season to the end of the season, how much he improved.
Well, Davion is our silent assassin, right? He doesn't say a whole lot, but he really improved. He talked more in huddles, talked more in practice, talked more in the locker room and off the court than anybody, any fan or any fan of Xavier basketball could imagine. I mean, he grew in that area. And I believe this, that the best is yet to come as he's here for more than 1 year. And that growth in terms of his talk and his communication will continue to be a powerful weapon for us to be a better team. Because your point guard is your quarterback. He's an extension of the coach. He sets the tone on defense and on offense. And really, guys like him set the tone every day. Davion did an incredible job of leading by example, playing through the bumps and bruises. You can imagine playing at the pace that he played at. I don't believe he missed a single practice. I don't believe he missed a single game. Ditto for Dez, by the way.
Yep.
I mean, those two guys were warriors in terms of giving us everything they have. And I think sometimes that's taken for granted, certainly not by me, because, you know, dependability, you know, is an ability level, like no different than shooting, passing. When you can count on someone to be there every day, That's a great source of pride. So Davion led by example. I think his leadership, his growth, his communication skills improved as the year went on. But the pace that he played with in our transition game, our run to score, you know, the identity of our offense really starts with him. And I don't know if there's anybody that was better at pushing the pace, making decisions on the run than Davion. I think he finished second in the Big East in assist-to-turnover ratio.
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
Maybe top five, top six in the Big East in assist. And his scoring improved as the year went on.
Yeah.
You know, at first, if you remember, he was a reluctant three-point shooter. He then became a better three-point shooter through his hard work and his dedication. And I think that he became more confident in what we did. But once he became a third double-figure scorer, that's really what gave us a chance to win so many games. Because we have always had Dez and Quincy, and then as Davion gained more and more and more productivity offensively, I think when you point to our best performances, there was always those three that performed.
Yeah.
Very seldom were we able to win when two of the three played well.
And don't forget with Davion, I mean, Shaka Smart sat in the media room downstairs and said, Davion might be the fastest guy in terms of pushing the ball that he's seen since Ty Lawson at North Carolina.
I mean, he pushed it every day in every drill and every day in practice, and he did it just remarkably well. I think that when you recruit somebody to a style, there would be an example of a style of play that really fits a player.
Yeah.
And he was the perfect fit for us. But I wouldn't trade him for anybody. His toughness, his consistency, his demeanor, being a great teammate, caring about the win, you know, playing alongside both Quincy and Dez, and then his development, his improvement, shooting the ball, it was really fun to watch. And I do think that you can't look at him as having less of a season than Dez and Quincy. I think each of them in their own right had remarkable individual seasons.
Yeah.
I remember there was a video I took from the Crosstown Shootout. It was as the time was winding down, the clock was expiring. I think it was the shootout. And Davion was right in the front of the frame of the shot. And as the buzzer went off, the lights were on, everybody's celebrating. He kind of puts his hands in the air for a second, maybe 2 seconds, puts them down, and then just walks right into the, you know, everybody else is celebrating. It's like, all right, on to the next thing, on to the next thing. And that just, to me, felt like such an example of what he brought to this team this season of, all right, great. Now let's keep it moving. Let's keep rolling. Let's not get too high. Let's not get too low. Stay steady.
Mm-hmm. And Davion, the other part of it is, and you know, I just want to bring it up because of how tough of a situation it was and really how much I admire him, is, you know, he lost his brother during the season, which you can only imagine. Maybe you can't imagine what that would feel like. And, you know, he was able to just continue onward, which, again, is, I think, a great credit to his family, to our program, his teammates. But really, it starts and stops with Davion. And again, you learn a lot about people when adversity strikes, and I don't even know what category to put that adversity in other than just watching him go through that, handle it, was nothing short of remarkable.
That's actually what I was going to say, is that I was so impressed by how he handled that. And as someone who's been fortunate to get to come to Xavier practices for the last 6 years, like, I'd put Davion up there with his process and the way that he works and his commitment to it. I'd put him right up there with Colby Jones in terms of the way he attacks every single day and the level of detail that he puts into his game. Is super impressive.
It is. You know, we start every practice with a ball handling regimen and routine. You guys know sometimes it's 2-ball dribbling, sometimes it's 1, and it takes 3 or 4 minutes. That doesn't sound like a lot of time. But we really have done it from the onset of early October all the way through our last practice leading up to the Georgia game. You know, and as a point guard, somebody who handles the ball, you could see where sometimes you take that serious. Sometimes maybe you look at it more as a warm-up. I don't know if I ever saw a difference in him in the hundreds of times we did that every day, first thing of practice, where he gave it less than his undivided attention, meaning he was just locked in, looked at it as, hey, I'm developing my craft. I have the ball in my hands more than anybody. I play fast. Coach wants me to take care of the ball. This is a helpful drill towards allowing me to get better and improve in that. And he did it the same way every day. And if you're his teammate and the point guard who handles the ball with ease in Davion's case, is taking it that serious. It becomes contagious where it spreads through the rest of the team. And again, it's leading by example, and I think that's something that he does a great job of.
The last thing I would say about Davion is one of the most interesting things from the episode when he was on here a few weeks ago was he was talking about the pace of play, and you just mentioned a few minutes ago, but he said, you would have thought that I would have turned the ball over more because of how fast I was playing, but actually turned the ball over less. And he goes, yeah. I don't really know how that works, but that's how it worked this year.
Yeah.
It, just the speed that he played at and to keep those turnovers to such a minimum as the year went on was it's incredible.
A lot of people that talk about, I'm a point guard, or I want to be a point guard, or is he a point guard? And, you know, and in today's game, there's a lot of versions of guards, you know, and the NBA is filled with them. I don't know. There's teams, maybe more teams in the NBA have this than don't, and that is you don't really have your traditional pass-first point guard that existed for eternity. You know, it's just the game's changed. You have to be able to shoot and play pick and roll, and there's different variations and sizes that have the ball in their hands. If you look at the Boston Celtics and you just say, okay, which guy's the point guard, a lot of times the lineup they put on the court, maybe it's Jason Tatum, maybe it's Jaylen Brown. They just, that's how the game has grown and evolved. But regardless of how tall or who they are, assist-to-turnover ratio determines who you are in terms of, are you a point guard? Can you handle the ball? Can your team function? Can you win? And it has to be a high assist and low turnovers. And Davion had that statistic from the first game to the last game wired. And that was a huge helpful component towards our offense. And I think we point to that as something we're really excited about in the future.
Yeah.
Quincy Oliveri this year, 106 threes, set the school record, most threes in a season, breaking Trayvon Blewett's record of 105, but off the court as well. I mean, signing autographs, going to Chick-fil-A to hand out the free nuggets when he hits his 10th three for everybody that was at the game at CentOS. I mean, all the little things that Quincy did endear himself to a fan base in his only year here at Xavier, I think it goes without saying how much of an impact he made on this team on the court, but also off the court as well. Somebody that any Xavier fan listening to this will remember for probably forever.
So the leadership group of our team, which was Dez, Davion, and Quincy, you know, it's like what I would say is like with your leadership group and sometimes to your own team, you know, look at a soup. You know, if the carrots that are in the soup, if you just ate the carrot, you may like them, you may hate them. But when you put them in the soup, they just taste better, or taste different, you know? And if you don't have the noodles and all the different ingredients, chili, for example, right? If the standalone ingredient, if you just ate that, you may walk away disappointed, but you put it all together, you have something special. And I think that Quincy's personality, his engaging, dynamic personality, was a great compliment to both Dez, who's more mild-mannered and a great teammate, Davion, who's the silent assassin and quiet. I think the three of them almost brought out the best in each other. I believe that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's also one thing to be brash or to be, you know, somebody that is very easy to talk to and eager to be in the community. You could be that, but if you don't back it up, that can go the wrong way as well, especially in a team sport. But Quincy's work ethic was as strong as anybody. You talked about Davion and even Dez's consistency on a day-in, day-out basis to always be able to count on them. Ditto for Quincy. And his extra work in terms of in the mornings, Sule Boom and Quincy, you know, both worked overtime on their game, their craft, their shooting. I don't know, in a game, during the season of a five-month stretch where I've been around individual players that have given so much of their time towards practice and working on their own game and their preparation for game than Sule and Quincy. Those two guys really stand out for me. But when you lead the Big East Conference, especially this past season, in three-pointers made, you have to feel really good about that. But if you also lead the Big East Conference this season in three-point percentage and you made the most, like that's another category in and of itself. I mean, I could coach the next 15 years at Xavier and not have anybody come close to both making the most with the highest percentage. If you have the highest percentage in the Big East, that's amazing. But to make the most and have the highest percentage, I think it says something about his unique shot-making ability and talent. The other thing that I admire about Quincy the biggest games on our schedule, in the biggest moments of our season, he delivered. Last 4 minutes against St. John's at home, the Crosstown shootout. Even in the Delaware game, which is one of our most difficult losses, he had over 30 points in that game. If he didn't, that game wouldn't have gone even as well as it did. So he showed up in our biggest moments throughout the year, answered the bell time and time again. His free throw attempts, his free throw percentage, his defensive rebounding, he's top five in the league in defensive rebounding, his scoring, which he led the Big East in all games, three-point makes, three-point percentage. I think you can look at his individual offensive season that he had, and really a season in its whole, as being up there with the best that's ever played at Xavier. I don't think I have to fight for him. He's played against the best schedule maybe that a Xavier team has ever played, and he did it game in, game out from start to finish. So I was thrilled for him that we were able to play in the NIT where he could have the chance to break Trayvon's record. I know how great of a player Trayvon was. He knocked me out when I was at Arizona. But to do it in less games as well, I think, again, those two guys really stand out as two great, great players and shooters. And the year that Quincy had on the heels of the year Sule Boom had in that one-year transfer, I think sets the tone, I hope, for some future players that will choose us in large part because of the path that those two guys have blazed.
Yeah, and let's not forget another feather in Quincy, Dez, and Davion's cap is they all appeared on this podcast during the season. So that's right, something yep. to – but I feel like we could sit here and we could talk about the season that just happened. But I know people are curious what you want next year to be. You know, you turn the page from this season to next season. There's a lot that's going to go into what that looks like, how it unfolds. What are your thoughts on next year here?
Well, I think 2024 is a completely new dynamic in the industry that we live in. You know, it used to be you build your program. And look, that's what we're doing. This offseason, there's so many different things that you want to improve and you want to be better and grow and connect. That's running a true program on and off the court. So that's always the number one priority. It's not trying to have a good team. It's building a program, something that's just bigger than one season that sets the tone for future success. But you now have to build a roster. And you're going to have to build a roster each and every year separate from the one that just happened. It's a different world. So with that, I think the first thing is we have to build our roster to be successful in the Big East Conference. A deeper team, more interchangeable parts. We have to add the ingredients that we felt we were missing this year. You know, I think the best transfer that we're going to have or transfers that we're going to have available for next year's team are going to start with Zach Fremantle and Jerome Hunter. God would not let them miss a single game next year based on everything that he's already challenged them to do.
That's
so
true.
We're looking forward to coaching both of those guys from start to finish. And I think when you look at both of them, where they are in their respective careers, their experience in the Big East, their experience at Xavier, and by the way, in our system, the hunger and desire for both to finish on top, I think you have two huge pieces to a successful team. But returning those that I think are going to be beneficial and that want to be here, that fit who we are, and then you know adding this spring and summer to that respective group so that next year when we take the court, we can be better and bounce back to where we were a year ago in an easier way. In terms of like the on-the-court approach, Adam, we have to get our defense better. You know, our defense in year one, although we had a great team, I think we finished, and I'll use Ken Palm and just the analytics. I think that's the safest way to look at it. In the 60s, that's not good enough. In the Big East regular season, I think we were like eighth. Again, the Big East has some great defensive teams, but eighth isn't good enough. But in that year, I think if you remember back, we really improved as the year went on. At one point, we were in the 90s, and we moved into the 60s. The lower the number, the better. This year, we finished, and although our record wasn't good and as good, we weren't nearly as good of a team. Our defense improved, believe it or not, by almost 20 spots. So we're in the 40s now. That's not good enough, and I'll point to the Big East Conference. Again, we finished in and around eighth in Big East only games. That means there's only three teams that are lower than us defensively, seven that are better. And the margin to be seventh or sixth is slight. But I think part of the identity when I was here the first time, me as a coach, our program staff, is that we could beat you on defense and on offense. And I think the development of that, recruiting to that, being tougher to score against in addition to playing our offense, I think that's where the secret sauce lies. You know, that's what we want to build. And we have to become bigger, better, tougher, more experienced, quicker, more interchangeable to allow that to happen. And I think in our recruiting efforts and as we build this roster, we build that with defense in mind.
You might say that's the good stuff. What is it, Mike and Ike's?
I'm off that stuff. I don't even want credit for that. It's a terrible thing to do.
I'm curious when you talk about, you know, going into the transfer portal and everything that, and how the dynamic of coaching in 2024 has changed. I'm just curious your thoughts on, you know, you see a lot of these coaches now having to adapt to what this is like. And in this world, there's always change, right? And the change that we currently have in the college basketball landscape is you might not have the same amount of four-year players as you had before because they're going to bounce around because that's what they're able to do. Mm-hmm. So for you, Coach, how has the mentality changed going into every season where you know you're going to essentially have to re-recruit your players just to come back as opposed to going into the portal or just knowing that they're going to, you know, be around for 2 to 3 years?
Look, you have to embrace change and evolve as it grows. Now, I will tell you that my plane landed here roughly 2 years ago as the new coach at Xavier, thrilled to be back in Cincinnati. And when I landed, if you'd say, what is your plan? That plan is not the same plan. You just blow it up because there are too many factors in today's world of college athletics that weren't or they were just beginning then 2 years ago. But it's just it's flipped upside down twice. I mean, for example, you know, you look at Cam Spencer's impact on UConn, right? This is Cam Spencer's third school, third program. He's a terrific player. He's one of the best college basketball players that I have coached against. Smart, tough, defense, offense. What a great fit for UConn. But that's a big difference when you can add somebody, you know, in his third school, and you're like, that. We're talking about potentially the national champ again, right, back to back. Caleb Love at Arizona, you know, a place that means a lot to me when you watch him. His impact, he's the Pac-12 Player of the Year. He left North Carolina as their starting point guard, eligible immediately, and maybe he'll lead them to a Final Four or a national championship. That's reality. You can not like it, you can love it. I don't know what side you want to fall into, but all of us are responsible for building our roster and our program. And there are certain opportunities that you have to strike and build and make your team better than it is. And you could do that through the transfer portal. I still believe that there's balance. I don't think you want to just be one-dimensional and just rely strictly on that. But there's going to be faces that leave your program. There's going to be faces that come into your program to be able to embrace change. That becomes our task.
Coach, one other thing that I want to ask you, this is my last question for you here on the show. The Big East this year was KenPom's second best conference, but they only got three teams in the NCAA tournament. We're recording this about 25 minutes before tip-off of the first game on Thursday, so we don't know how all the teams are going to do from all the conferences, but just now entering into March Madness, Creighton, Marquette, and of course UConn, the reigning national champions. But I'm curious your thoughts on the Big East and the talent that was at the top of the Big East this year, but also the quality that was in the middle of the league and the fact that they only got three teams in.
Yeah, I'll only speak from experience. You know, this was the 19th season I've been a head coach. I've never coached in a conference setting season that was more difficult and challenging than the one that we just finished. Not because of how good or how bad our team was, but the night-in, night-out dynamic of the coach that you're facing, the quality of opponent, team that you're facing, the individual talent and experience that existed on every single Big East team, the venues that you play in, where every one of them is incredibly challenging to win on the road. And if you're in Madison Square Garden, and you guys both were, I don't know if I've ever ever seen a college tournament, a championship tournament with more pageantry and more love and more competitive spirit and quality than the Big East tournament in 2024. I mean, it was just, it was incredible.
It was awesome.
The atmosphere, if you're a young player in that atmosphere, I mean, you feel like this is the best of the best. There's nothing that could top this. So the quality of opponent, like the metrics, we can argue about it, but we were a conference more deserving than three teams. The one team that I just felt incredibly bad for is Seton Hall, because UConn they're a superpower team. I don't know if they'll win the national championship. It's what captivates March Madness. Anybody can beat anybody, but I know they're capable, and I would say that they're the odds-on favorite to do it. They won it last year, and I think that one of the narratives was, you know, well, they beat UConn at home, but, you know, Donovan Clingan got hurt in the game. You can't bring that up. If you bring that up, the slippery slope then becomes, well, what about this game? What about that game? Well, what about when Seton Hall was playing their game and Kadari Richmond didn't play? You know, like if you're going to play that, that's a slippery slope that none of us can go. I mean, the fact that they beat UConn and they won 13 Big East games and they earned it from start to finish, non-conference, look, none of us are perfect. They may have had a game or two where they didn't win, and that hurt them. But I don't know what could ever not allow them to be in the tournament with their resume and how well they played and the fact that they beat UConn. And look, they didn't just beat UConn. They beat Marquette. You know, they beat St. John's twice. You know, I mean, they were a tough team. They earned it. And I just, if you're at Seton Hall, I think what you then ask is, what do I have to do to make it? You know, there are some other teams that I think clearly could have been in, St. John's, Providence, et cetera. But that one hurt. And I think it hurt all of us as Big East coaches because we clearly knew what Seton Hall did, how hard they played, the great wins that they had. I thought they were the most deserving next team in our league. And by the way, I certainly wouldn't want to play St. John's in the NCAA tournament. No. They were playing their best at the end. And again, you can make the argument for them as well.
Yeah.
Well, the bubble's scary regardless. And now it's even scarier, in my opinion. Because, what are you supposed to do?
I think what you're running into is what we experienced this year in non-conference play. The parity is much different because a lot of the mid-major teams are loading up with transfers themselves. And what they're trying to do is become the most experienced that they can be. This year when we were playing our non-conference slate, it was amazing. Each team you would play, senior, fifth-year senior, 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 junior. And, you know, experience is still incredibly important in college basketball. So I think the seeds of this year's NCAA tournament, who got in, who didn't, it's more difficult now than ever on the committee. I think we all acknowledge that. But I'm only speaking from coaching in this league for 22 games this year, 10 at home, 10 on the road, 2 in the Big East tournament. The experience that I've had and knowing the quality of depth and what games feel like and truly how talented and good teams are, I couldn't imagine we couldn't have 4 in. And clearly you could point to more than that.
Coach, I just want to say, and Adam talked about it to start the show, and I just want to say myself, to come from the first episode of this show where we were trying to figure out everything that we wanted to talk about and set the stage back there in October to where we are now to end the season, I just want to personally thank you for staying so consistent with this. We've had a great time this year. I've had a ton of fun. It's been very fulfilling for me, and I look forward to doing this down the line with you and everybody else here in the future. So
I mean, you guys make it easy. Love talking to you. And, you know, your passion for Xavier basketball is something that motivates me. I know how much you guys love it and you put the time in. You also know our program because you're here during practices and in shoot-arounds and after games and before games. So the knowledge base you have about the happenings and what goes on, I think also really adds to the podcast. But my biggest reason for doing it is to be able to connect with so many different people in a unique way that oftentimes you overlook as a coach because you're worried about the next practice and the next season. And I'm more guilty of that than anything. But to be able to talk to Kenny Freeze and to be able to bring to light even some guests we haven't had on yet, I'm really continuing to look forward to connecting with them.
Yeah. I think the offseason, you know, we may not have an episode every week going in here to the offseason. We'll establish a schedule and all that going forward. But I think there's a world here in the offseason where maybe the show even gets better because we're able to, it's a little easier to schedule. We're able to bring some guests on, other coaches or people that we couldn't have on during the season because schedules conflicted and people that we tried to have, whatever. So
stay tuned.
There will be plenty more here throughout the offseason. It's not ending just because the season ended, but you'll hear more about that as the weeks go on. So thank you all for watching the show all season. Make sure you follow along at Sean Miller Pod on social media. You subscribe on YouTube. Follow us on all the social media platforms. Thank you to our presenting sponsor, Deer Park Roofing. They've been great all year with the show. The official payroll sponsor of the Sean Miller Podcast, payroll partners, and of course, TGE Solar as well. Thank you to everybody who watched the show, who made it great this year, and we'll see you very soon on the Sean Miller Podcast.
Thank you.
This has been the Sean Miller Podcast, presented by Deer Park Roofing, with your hosts, Paul Frichtner and Adam Baum. Join us again soon for another episode with the head coach of the Xavier Musketeers, Sean Miller.
I'm from Boston, Massachusetts.
Milano, Italy.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
St. Louis, Missouri.
Abuja, Nigeria.
And
I chose Xavier University.
For its education,
more opportunities.
For passion.
Because it felt like home.
The community.
Campus life.
D1 basketball.
Because I love Cincinnati.
I came here
to be a Musketeer.
I am.
I am.
I am.
And we
are the faces of Xavier.
The Sean Miller Podcast is proud to partner with Deer Park Roofing, a company that's provided elite service for homes and businesses since 1996 and leads the industry in professionalism, quality, and responsiveness. Whether your needs are residential or commercial, like the outstanding work on the Cintas Center, the home of Xavier basketball, Deer Park can handle any job and ensure it's done right. Deer Park's motto is protect what's important, and what's important to you is important to Deer Park Roofing. Visit DeerParkRoofing.com.